Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
It's time for a noon kick.
And as they say in Tinseltown, roll up.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
They had pride. They had talent. They had hats and T-shirts.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, welcome in. Happy Friday, everybody. Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Feeling good today. It's a Friday. Got the Friday moods going. Alan Stone's going to be up here in about 10 minutes. We got Adam Rittenberg, Nimick in studio. And it is a Joe Fish dish. Of Dirt and Sprague. What's happening, man?
What up? It's been a while.
It has been a while. How you been? You doing good?
Oh, yeah. Doing great. Holiday season. I've been playing a lot more Christmas music lately, putting me in that cheery mood, jolly mood.
You getting in the vibe? I will say, there's always the fear for me about overusing Christmas music before you get to Christmas.
For sure. It cannot be played before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's a sin.
Wait until Christmas or until Thanksgiving, or at least the area around Thanksgiving. I'll give you like Thanksgiving Day or day or two before Thanksgiving. I'll grant you a 48-hour period there. But yeah, you got to wait off because I always get burnt out by Christmas music.
Right. I think I've done a great job with my music, Christmas music approach this year. I waited a couple weeks and then one day it just kind of dawned on me. I'm like, I haven't listened to any Christmas music.
Man.
I need to get some Bruce Springsteen. Merry Christmas, baby. Come on.
I'm the same way this year too with movies. I have not watched a single Christmas movie yet.
And I started to ramp that up the other day with the child. I turned on Rudolph. We watched Frosty the other night too. So just kind of like the light switch went off. I'm like, dude, Christmas is here in like 2 weeks.
Two weeks, man.
Gotta ramp this up here. Get in a jolly mood.
Well, I feel like I've done that before too in the past where like you get so amped for Christmas and you're so fired up that December's there. And then the first of the month rolls around and you start watching Christmas movies. And there's only so many good ones. Like, let's be honest. Like there's you have your staples that you watch every year, the handful of movies. And I have far too many times, you know, I've used all of my ammo way too early in the month.
Right.
Because once you watch, there's only like Christmas Vacation I can watch multiple times because it's a comedy. Elf maybe twice because it makes you laugh. But like the sentimental Christmas movies, like if you sit down and watch A Wonderful Life, which is a great movie, it's like 5 hours long.
Well, and let's also be real, like, what time throughout the other 11 months of the year are you watching movies from the 30s, 40s, 50s? I mean,
right. It doesn't happen very often.
You have to really like a movie from that era
exactly.
To watch it multiple times or just bring it up at all during the year.
Well, if you watch them all in like the first 2 weeks of December, next thing you know, you got like 10 days before Christmas and you're like, man, I'm all out of good Christmas movies to watch. I got nothing left in my arsenal here.
Yeah. And then I start watching the kids movies like, you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, let's watch Frosty. Frosty is like 22 minutes long. That was like a TV special
in
the 60s. I'm like, Whoa, all right. I guess I got to figure out something else to watch. Let's put on a crappy Netflix Christmas special here.
Yeah, find something on some streaming service. Now, let me ask you this. As a dad, now, how old's your son now?
He's 6. He'll be 7 in March.
Okay, so he's still in, like, prime Christmas age then?
Oh, yeah.
Like, full-blow Christmas.
Elf on a shelf, still believes he's moving around
thing.
At night. Yeah, he's totally on board. I know this could be, like, one of the last years where he believes in Santa, and hopefully the kids aren't in the car, but...
Well, no, yeah, Santa is real, Joe. Santa is real, so there's no reason...
About?
I mean,
yeah.
Come on. Of course Santa's real. Jesus, Joe. I do wonder, like, yeah, I can't remember what age I grew out of that, kind of just being so amped for Christmas thing every month, but the thing I was curious to ask you, because I hope this when if I have a kid someday, is... Because I love the old-school claymation Christmas movies.
Right.
Like, you get into those, like the Mr. Freeze, Mr. Hot Guy, or whatever that one is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I know what you're talking about.
The Year Without a Santa Claus kind
yes.
of stuff. The Rudolph one that you mentioned. So he's into those. Like, he hasn't been spoiled by modern technology. Like, does he watch it and just, like, roll his eyes?
Well, he is. I mean, halfway through Rudolph the other night, he gave me a can we watch something else? And I'm like, what? We're putting ornaments on the tree. This is Christmas, all right?
This is what we watch in the town.
Celebrate Christmas. Yeah, so he, and this happened a couple weeks ago with, like, Netflix has a newer version of the Magic School Bus.
Oh.
And so once he finished that up, I'm like, oh, you should, hey, they have the old one on here. Check that out.
Let's watch the old school version.
His words, seriously, he says, that one looks weird. And it was from like 98, 99 or something like that. I'm like, whatever. You don't know what you're talking about.
Come on, man.
This is what we had to go through to get to this stage. Okay, son.
Yeah, that's going to be a rule in my house. Like, you have to, like, I don't care if you think it's corny, if the graphics are bad, which of course they are because they were like made with clay in the 1950s. Like, of course they look terrible. But no, those are go-tos. Now, what about Charlie Brown? Can he handle Charlie Brown?
Charlie Brown should be fine, and thank you for reminding me. That might be...
Dude, that's a go-to. You got to watch Charlie Brown, man.
I've totally spaced on that one. I'm going to have to bring that up probably tonight or something.
Somebody, P1 Deal said, Dirt is a premature Yuletider. I am, man. I am. It's dangerous. I'm serious. It's a fear every year. And I feel like I've handled it the best I've ever handled it because this is my last day. I'm going on vacation, so I won't be back until the 30th. So I'm in a really good mood today because I'm on the eve of vacation.
Where are you going, by the way?
I'm staycationing.
Ah.
And I cannot wait to staycation.
That's very nice.
I haven't, usually we go visit my brother in North Carolina every year, but this year I kind of put my foot down. I was like, man, that is not a vacation. Like, you fly all the way across the country. It takes all day. I love seeing him and his kids. It's awesome to spend time with their family, but like, as you know, with he's got three kids under the age of like six.
You can only do so much.
Dude, you were waking up every day at like 6:30. It's like adult life, and I don't want any part of that on vacation, okay? I want to sleep in. I want to have a good time. Like, this is my time off of work before I have to go back. So it's like an exhausting week off. So this year I finally was like, you know what? Let's just hang around, not go visit him. And it actually forced him. So they're coming out after Christmas. So I forced his hand to come stay with us for a couple of days and visit after Christmas. But that's part of the reason why I'm holding off on all my Christmas things is next week with the week off. Like, I'm diving in. It's Christmas movie season for me, man.
Yeah, it's a Christmas shopping season as of like right now for me. I was looking at the calendar and paychecks, how those all line up. And I'm like, well, looks like I'll be getting gifts here in the next couple days.
Hey, it's payday today, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys, I was like,
all right, cash from checks. let's see. And I will say, for stocking stuffers, Dollar Tree all day long.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You know, I'm not getting paid by it. I'm just saying, I was there the other day and I'm like, what have I been doing my whole life? Paying $10 for the same thing at Target or whatever.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, you got to find the cheap deals for stocking stuffers.
Seriously.
Throw some deodorant in there.
And it's the same crap every single year.
Yeah.
A little tube of toothpaste for the kids, some Lifesavers book thing.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing.
And it's dumb too, because I bet he opens it up and just immediately throws it to the side.
Yeah.
Like, all right, can we get to the real stuff now, please?
A stupid little 50 puzzle. Like, it's all crap. So if you're going to spend a dollar on it that's going to be thrown away in like 3 months, my God, I just went through all of his toys the other day and I have a giant box to give to Goodwill. Like, let's be smart.
Okay. Take it easy.
Shampoo, conditioner, body wash. That's all he'll get in his stocking.
Boom, boom, boom. That's all you need. I also, the things that all kids love.
The toiletries.
that's what they're looking for. Some toothpaste. Thanks, Dad.
It's got Ninja Turtles on it. Come on.
I am fired up though this year because my nephew, God, how old is he? I think he's four and a half, somewhere in that range. So he's also like prime Christmas season. And I don't know if you had these when you were a kid, but when I was a kid, I used to be so into like the little kid football uniforms where they come with like basically the made of plastic helmet that you don't hit anything with it because it would cause brain damage. But you get like the little paper thin shoulder pads and you get like football pants and a jersey. And I used to have probably of like the NFL teams. I had like half the NFL.
Wow.
Niners, Bills, Packers, Cowboys, Steelers. Like, I had them all. I had a Seahawks one. Loaded up.
My dad tried to deck me on the Dolphins gear. He's a Dolphins fan.
He just tried to train you, right?
Yeah, he just tried to convert me early, but didn't happen. I still got that Marino jersey around somewhere in that helmet too, just the like punter face mask.
Yeah. One little thin kind of thing across the front. Well, I'm fired up because I'm buying that for him this year.
Nice.
And I didn't know if they still sold them or not, and I was like searching through Amazon recently and I was like, he needs one of these jerseys
for sure.
You throw one of those on, you go run into the couch for like a couple hours like you're playing a game in your basement. I'm fired up for that.
You can give him your old dusty ones, 15 year old, 20 year old.
We're not around anymore. I know. I shouldn't have thrown those away. I should have kept all those helmets and like put them in a man cave someday. Just hang them up along the side of the wall like the old logos.
Why do you have all these toddler jerseys hanging
up
in your attic?
Good old days. Good old days. Well, no, I'm in a great mood. I'm going on vacation after today, so I'm fired up. It's going to be a fun show. As I mentioned, Adam Rittenberg is going to join us at 12:30, so we'll talk bowl games. So I'm not going to be back until after the college football playoff. So, Joe, we got to preview the college football playoff today.
I know that's right.
It's like way too early to do, but I want to talk about the games. I want to make some picks there. We also have bowl season starting next week, so we got to make our bowl picks for the Pac-12. So we do that coming up at 2. There's 7 different games we got to rattle through. We will spread the line. I'm really pissed at the Celtics right now because they were so close to winning. I came back with the parlay of the day yesterday, and anybody who listened in the final segment, I gave you the over in Thursday Night Football, which I think the Ravens ended up hitting on their own, but no, 42. So they came close to hitting on their own. The over was only 44 in that game, all over it. Denver -6 was free money. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
that was free money. And then I took the Celtics +1.5 at home. They hadn't lost a game at home all year. They freaking lost to the 76ers.
Hey, man, that's how it is. God. That's gambling. Everything that I've done for my picks today was opposite of gut reaction. That's how it goes.
That's where you're at right now?
It's like, what do I think is going to happen? Well, that's not going to happen, so pick this.
I've had a few weeks of that gambling throughout the year where you just go opposite. You know, you just can't trust your instincts anymore. So I'm pissed at the Celtics because they cost me money last night. It was a great sports night, and I want to start there, actually, because you had Thursday Night Football, and everybody's crowning the Ravens Super Bowl champs. It's hard to blame them, man, the way they're playing right now. So I want to talk about that game. Lamar Jackson, what the Jets are doing after the game needs to be made fun of. We have some fun audio from the game. The Blazers suck still. They lost in Denver last night. It was a great sports night. That's where we'll start. Thanks for being with us on a Friday. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hallelujah, it's Friday. Cause I've been working all week.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Again, Adam Rittenberg going to join us bottom of the hour. Talk some bowl games with him. A couple of funny texts at the Bet You Today text line. Let me say, who needs a jersey? I had a Mighty Ducks starter jacket. Now, a starter jacket is still a thing.
The retro 90s hats, jackets, champion starter jackets, yeah, they have...
Are they coming back?
Yeah, there's a few shops in Portland. I know one called Produce that has a lot of vintage. That's the word I'm looking for.
Vintage.
Vintage sports gear, hats, okay, and stuff like that. So, the Mighty Ducks one... champion jacket, starter jacket, that might be worth a couple bucks nowadays.
Dude, starter jackets were the bee's knees back in the day.
Dude, I lost mine as a kindergartner. And
did
I
you really?
Yeah, I left it at a movie theater or something like that. I was crushed.
Dude, there was Nick Krupke, our buddy over at Fox, who does sports. He tweeted this out last night. It is a fun walk down memory lane if you want to go look. If you're on Twitter, I retweeted it as well. But he found their archival footage of the post-game report from the 1994 Rose Bowl,
okay,
or I guess 95, whatever year it would have ended up being because he played on New Year's Day. But so he found like the post-game report and they're interviewing players and all this stuff. And it was so fun to go back and not only watch the highlights of the game against Penn State and see the old uniforms, but then they showed the Rich Brooks like press conference after the game, and he was totally wearing an Oregon starter jacket. I was like, God, it's a good look, man. We need to bring those back.
Hey, 90s 90s stuff is in. The 80s has passed. You know?
80s is overlooked now. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Now we're into bringing the 90s stuff back.
I think it's a great idea. If anybody wants to venture into a business with me, is Starter even like a company that exists anymore, or do they go out of business?
They are, because I remember Tony Romo was a sponsor for them up until. He was one of their athletes, quote unquote, with the finger quotes.
Are you kidding me?
Swear to God, yeah. I mean, trust me.
You're a Cowboy fan. I trust you.
I would know. So yeah.
How about them Cowboys? Tony Romo was repping Starter. Huh?
Yeah. 2017 Starter, not back in the day. Cool Starter, like, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. We need to bring Starter back. And then another one texted in, distracted by Polish League basketball during work. The Oregon Lottery has ruined me. Yeah, amen to that, man. Amen to that. I had a little feed going with buddies last night about all the different things we were gambling on. It was actually a really good night in sports. That was a night that I thought, you know, I don't know when I'm ready to upgrade in house size, but I thought last night sitting around, like, I need a man cave with multiple screens. And usually you say that on college football weekends, right? Because you don't have like a goal line. I mean, the ESPNU goal line thing isn't that good. It doesn't really flip to all. I don't know. I've never been that big of a fan of it. Red zone's not a huge deal because I love watching the red zone, and I think they do a good job on Sundays. But there's some nights, man. Like I was flipping, so I had money on the Celtics and 76ers, the opener of the TNT doubleheader. That was going on. You had the Thursday night football game that Lamar Jackson is one of those guys that no matter the outcome of the game or where it's going, you still want to watch, which is a pretty powerful thing to say. Like they were just boat racing the Jets out of that stadium. I think it was 35-7 or 42-7 at one point. I mean, that thing was ugly, but I kept wanting to watch the game. Well, because I had some money on the over and I wanted to make it hit. I wanted to make sure it hit. But Lamar Jackson is so fun to watch, man. So I was keeping an eye on that. And then for golf fans out there, I know this is probably out of your waters, Joe, but the President's Cup was great last night. It was night two, and the Americans were playing terrible. Then all of a sudden, they won a couple of matches at the end. Justin Thomas hit a big putt. Him and Tiger were like fist pumping on the green. It was great entertainment. It was an awesome night of sports, and I need more than one screen. That was my lesson of the night.
Now, I know there's an NFL analyst. I think his name's Warren Sharp or something like that, but he's an analytics guy.
Yeah, Warren Sharp is awesome.
And he tweeted out, I think it could have even been week one, just, you know, welcome to the season. Here is my lair. And it is just screen, 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 screen.
Just all over the place.
Yeah, he literally has like every game up, plus both red zones, the Comcast and the DirecTV red zones. And it's just like, oh my God, please let me get to that point one day in life.
I need this, man. I need this.
I need my own, like Buffalo Wild Wings. They've been making fun of the man cave commercials lately.
Right, right, right.
No, I want my own man cave. Are you kidding me? I don't want to pay $8 for a Widmer Hef or something. No, I want my own layer, please.
Yeah, it was tough to try and decipher what you wanted to watch at what point. And then thankfully the Blazer game was kind of a standalone as the night went on. And I guess not thankfully, if you don't want to watch them lose again to a team above 500. And I'll get to that in a moment. The Ravens thing, though, Lamar Jackson, I mean, that was the story of the night, I thought, last night in sports. I mean, he set the single season rushing record for a quarterback. He did it like, what, two or three runs into the game? Like, it happened right off the bat. He had a couple of long ones. Some of the numbers behind this, they blew my mind. Now, it makes sense when you think about it, but it's not something that I guess, pops in your mind initially. The Ravens, as a team now, they have 2,830 rushing yards on the season. That is the most through 14 games in the NFL since 1978. Since 1978, the Patriots did it. The Patriots had 9 more rushing yards. So that is the most in 78, and the Pats were only 9 yards ahead of them. That puts the Ravens on a 16-game pace of 3,234, which would break the NFL single-season rushing record for a team. Only two teams have ever rushed for 3,000 yards in a season, those 1978 Pats and the 1973 Buffalo Bills. So they are likely on pace to set the rushing yard record as a team this year, on top of Lamar Jackson setting the quarterback record, becoming only the third team in the history of the NFL and the first one since 1978 to rush for 3,000 yards as a team. So that just puts it into context of what they're doing with Ingram and just all the pieces they have in the run game. On top of that, this one blew me away. Now, this is true of a lot of running backs too, because Lamar Jackson doesn't lead the league in rushing yards. I think he's borderline top 10 though, after last night, maybe 8 or 9, somewhere in that range. He has 1,103 rushing yards on the season, 1,103. That is as much or more than 4 NFL teams.
What?
Think about that for a second. Lamar Jackson has 1,103 rushing yards. That is the same number as the Chicago Bears, as a team, have 1,103 rushing yards. It is more than the Jets, not more than the Jets. It's right in the same area as the Jets. The Jets have about 30-something more yards. The Falcons have a few more yards. You know how many rushing yards the Miami Dolphins have this year? 875.
Wow.
So he is rushing at the same clip or more than 4 different NFL teams.
And if you want to talk about just the put in perspective of what he's doing among the NFL players, so he is 22 years old and about to win the MVP. Joe Burrow is about to win the Heisman, and he's 23.
I know. Isn't that wild?
What?
Isn't that wild? I mean, you look at Baltimore, too, just the way they're playing. It's so hard. I try often to come in and like pump the brakes on just reactionary takes of like, just take a deep breath. Like, let's see things play out. We've seen teams kind of get hot and they don't always go on to win the Super Bowl. You know, Kansas City was a little bit of this last year, right? I mean, the way that they were winning games and Mahomes was running through people. They got the number one seed in the AFC. They hosted the AFC championship game and they couldn't get over New England when it mattered most in the postseason. And Mahomes, by the way, was the same kind of player as Lamar in terms of just constantly wanting to watch them. Like whenever Mahomes, and not to say Mahomes is bad this year, he's still having a great year, but he's been a little banged up and the numbers aren't quite where they were last season. I mean, just whenever they were on TV, you had to keep an eye on what Patrick Mahomes was doing. And Lamar Jackson is the same thing this year. Just when you look at them, though, like in the way that they're playing, it's just hard for me to see them losing right now. It just is because they're such a complete football team. And Lamar doesn't blow you away as a passer. I know the numbers look good. You had it in your update. He had 5 touchdowns last night. I think it's the 3rd time this year he's done that. He's up near 30 touchdown passes on the season. But, I mean, I think early in the 3rd quarter, he had like 66 passing yards. Like, that's not their forte. But what makes it so easy for him is the fact that everybody has to pay so much attention to stopping him and Ingram. Like, that's all the focus of defenses when they face Baltimore, that you're going to get guys running open down the field or you're going to get one-on-one coverage on the outside that you can take advantage of because you have to put so many bodies in the box. And when you add that to the fact that they have a great 1-2 punch of running the football on Ingram and Lamar Jackson, and they're good defensively, I mean, you look, I think they've won, what, 9 straight games in a row now or somewhere in that range, 8 straight games, and they've done it not just beating bad teams, which they have. I mean, they got wins over Cincinnati and Arizona, and last night the Jets suck. Like, they've beaten some bad teams in there, but they've also beaten San Francisco. They beat Seattle in Seattle. They beat New England. And I'm just, like, I'm trying to find, like, Kansas City, I felt like had a weakness last year going into the postseason. It was their defense. Like, just how much can you trust their defense? Can they get stops when they need to? And it's almost the same thing this year. When you just look at the way they match up with other teams in the AFC, Kansas City has a really hard time stopping the run. I know they already beat Baltimore head-to-head, but Baltimore's kind of kicked it into another gear since that game. But they have a tough time stopping the run. And for New England, like, maybe their defense figures things out the second time around and doesn't give up 37 points to them. But New England has all sorts of issues on offense. Like, are they going to be able to outscore Baltimore? So I'm trying not to be reactionary, man, but just watching the way Baltimore plays right now, it's just hard for me to see anybody beating them when it matters the most.
Well, really, since week 6, when they played Cincinnati, they have been on a roll where, as you said, they've played some patsies, but they do what you're supposed to do when you play those teams, and it's blow them out. And they've also done that to teams who you didn't expect them to do that to. Against the Texans, they rolled them. They played the Patriots as well, and they rolled them. So you have them week after week now just showing out against teams. And when you look at the AFC as well, just who could end up stopping them on the way to the Super Bowl? You look at, well, I just said Houston. They blew them out of the water, so yeah, that doesn't give you a lot of confidence.
I totally forgot about that one, too. They smoked Houston at home.
Exactly. They beat New England already. 37 points they put up on that New England defense that is supposed to be one of the best of the era. And then you also have them playing Kansas City earlier in the season, which they lost that game, but that was in week 3. That was with a healthy Patrick Mahomes. That was a much different circumstances surrounding that game. And if you're going into that game now, betting on it, trying to choose a winner for that one, I bet majority of people are taking the Ravens over the Chiefs at this point in the season. So then you're looking at who are they going to lose to? It looks like at this point, whoever they face in the Super Bowl.
Because
you have,
man,
the 49ers, played them well. You have the Saints, who are really playing really well right now. So at this point in the AFC, I mean, who else but the Ravens?
Yeah, it is. It's amazing to watch. And what happened after the game, too? Did you get the Ingram audio? Did we pull that?
Oh, I can. Yeah.
OK,
I can,
so I want to play that a little bit later on. We don't have to play it now. We can play it later in the show. But it was funny. Ingram interviewed Lamar Jackson, and it was funny after the game. But did you see before that? Or actually, I guess it would have been after that. So the Jets get just ran up and down the field by Baltimore and by Lamar Jackson last night. And their players responded after the game by essentially lining up, asking for Lamar Jackson autographed jerseys.
Hey, man, we were just talking about the man cave. All right,
dude, you're an NFL player. Isn't there a way to do that in like the locker room before you leave?
Like, isn't there a sense of like pride after just getting blown
out?
Like,
you just got killed on national TV. Didn't cover, by the way. A lot of people thought, and I ended up throwing a couple of bucks on them plus 17.5. I bought it up. They had the ball late because I thought they could backdoor cover that thing. Nope. They couldn't pick up a 4th down, but I don't know. Like, it's one thing in the NBA when guys are like swapping jerseys and taking pictures, and I get that that happens in the NFL, but what happened last night was they had to bring out like a box of Lamar Jackson jerseys
to
sign. Like, they lined up. I think it was Barstool that tweeted out, it looks like it's like a Make-A-Wish Foundation kind of thing for the Jets. Like, they were lined up and he was signing like a jersey, taking a picture, signing a jersey, taking a picture, like they were kids at a candy store. Like, that is a bad look,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, like, literally, it's just they take the jersey off of their pads, the game-worn jersey.
Yeah, and then you swap it with somebody. Usually that's the way it works. And I'm totally fine with that. Like, that's a soccer thing. It's a respect. Like, hey, you take my jersey, I'll take yours. Dame did it last night with Von Miller, which is kind of random because Von Miller was at the Nuggets game. But when you had a bunch of guys, like, I don't know. That was a bad look for the Jets, man. I couldn't believe that after the game.
How does that conversation go down? Like, the New York Jets PR team goes to the communications team in Baltimore. So a couple of our players, they want some signed jerseys. Think we can work that, like, do you have a box of extra jerseys we could maybe, like,
you got a box of the road whites you could bring out, please?
Because
we got
a lot of embarrassing. Adam Gase, if he has any semblance of head coach left in him, I would lay into them, but I probably don't see that happening.
That happened last night. Baltimore, man, it's hard to not, you always want to just kind of let things play out and not be overreactionary, but it's hard to see anybody beating them the way they're playing right now. They're rolling, and they're close to locking up that number one overall seed in the AFC and getting home field advantage and making the road to the Super Bowl in the AFC go through Baltimore. Hey, we got a bunch of college football stuff to get to. There's offensive coordinator news again, surprisingly, for Oregon. And we have an offensive coordinator note on Oregon State. We'll get to those coming up in a little bit. But Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, our buddy, I want to talk bowl games, Rose Bowl, college football playoff expansion, the whole thing. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN is next. But first, here's Joe with SportsCenter.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Daily Ticker time on a Friday. Excited for this one as bowl season is right around the corner. We got all sorts of news on Oregon and Oregon State offensive coordinators. We got a Rose Bowl coming up. Lots going on in the college football world, including the Heisman Trophy being handed out tomorrow night. Joining us now to talk about all of that and more, Adam Rittenberg, our friend from ESPN, senior writer for college football at ESPN Rittenberg on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Adam, thanks so much for the time today, man. We really appreciate it. I'll just start. I haven't had you on since the college football playoff was announced. We know the four teams. Oklahoma ends up number four. Not a lot of drama that went into it after Saturday night, but just your thoughts initially on the matchups and what's coming on December 28th.
Well, it's good to be with you. Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good playoff, especially the Clemson-Ohio State game. I tweeted this a few days ago that I know it's kind of recency bias, but I can't remember a semifinal that I've been more excited for than this one, just because it's two undefeated teams, two teams that have been so dominant, two incredible quarterbacks, two great running backs, two great defenses. So, you know, that one certainly stands out. I think Oklahoma, you know, was deserving of the four spot after, you know, Utah lost to Oregon in the Pac-12 title game, but they're going to have their work cut out for them against LSU, especially with LSU playing a little better defensively. It just seems like a team of their fate is to play in New Orleans with Joe Burrow trying to win a national title. It just feels like that's what's going to happen, but Oklahoma has a chance to stop that. And you know, they've been in the playoff and LSU hasn't, and that should that experience in theory should help them. You know, quarterback Jalen Hurts hasn't been in the playoff with Oklahoma, but he has been with Alabama, and so that should help them prepare for that LSU game.
Well, and then on that too, I know Larry Scott had some comments that fired everybody up out here, and I haven't talked about him yet on the show today, but basically, you know, we got to keep the Rose Bowl intact. He's not quite fighting for an 18 playoff. And you look again now, this is a year, at least last year, you had another conference on the outside looking in with you because Notre Dame made the playoff. This year, the four other Power 5 conferences are in and the Pac-12 is the only one on the outside looking in. What do you think that says about the conference and how should the Pac-12 handle this conversation? Because they've only been in two of the, 6 years or 5 years it's been now.
Yeah, no, and I think before the Pac-12 title game, Larry was pretty upfront about what it would mean to not make the playoff and what it would mean to make the playoff. And so using words like painful, and it is painful, and you know, understanding that the entire perception is shaped by whether you get in or you get or you're not in, right, even if you're not that great. I mean, the ACC has not been a good conference, okay? But Clemson gets in every year and they win the national title. And so they don't take the hit like the Pac-12. You know, the Pac-12 is just the worst football on the planet because they don't make the playoff. I don't think that's necessarily true, but you have to get teams in. And that's why I think it would behoove Larry and it would behoove the Pac-12 to be more vocal about an 18 playoff, because that's where we're going to go eventually, I think. And I think there's more discussions behind the scenes about it. I just don't think it's healthy for the sport when you have a conference left out 3 years in a row. We can certainly debate what the Pac-12 could do differently, but the margins are so small here. And I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if Oregon had made the playoff this year in an 18 system. Obviously, they didn't make it in the four, and I get why they didn't. Mm-hmm. But I think going forward, that's a good thing. You want everybody represented. You want it to be a national playoff. And that, I think, should be the message coming out of San Francisco with the Pac-12 headquarters.
Yeah, amen to that. We're talking with Adam Rittenberg, a college football writer for ESPN. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at ESPN Rittenberg. Now, I was reading up your piece on ESPN the other day. It was great because it was a breakdown and a pick for every single bowl game. Now, there's way too many of these, but I love bowl season, no matter how crappy the matchup is. And it was funny just to hear a little tidbit and then your pick at the end of it. But then you had a colleague at ESPN who ranked the bowl games from most entertaining or best to worst. So I'll ask you, Adam, what give me your top five. In the college football playoff, you mentioned that semifinal. Everybody's jacked for it. But outside of that, give me your top five bowl matchups.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can give you everything. I haven't thought about all of that in terms of entertainment. But I would say Rose Bowl would definitely be in the top five with Wisconsin and Oregon. You know, two teams that have similar structures with their offensive line play. They both have an elite player in their backfield with Justin Herbert for Oregon and Jonathan Taylor for Wisconsin. So you're always excited for that one. You know, I think, you know, the Sugar Bowl is, you know, interests me just to see if Georgia's going to show up and if Baylor can complete an incredible season with a win over Georgia. You know, no one expected Baylor to be here, and they already are under Matt Rhule. So that one would certainly be, you know, a game that I'm looking forward to as well. And, you know, Michigan, Alabama, I think the brand names jump out. I don't know if it'll be a particularly competitive game if Alabama wants to play. But I think there's a lot of interesting subplots there with the two coaches and the fact that Michigan's looking for a win like this. And does Alabama even want to play the game? You know, there's a lot going on, you know, in going into that matchup. You know, and one that I'm really looking forward to, just because I study these teams really closely, is Notre Dame and Iowa State.
Yeah.
You know, matching up in, I think it's the Camping World Bowl. You know, Iowa State's a team. They went 7-5, but they lost four of those games by a total of 11 points. They've got a really good offense, a really good defense. They just haven't found ways to finish games. And then Notre Dame, I don't know about you, but this is the quietest 10-2 Notre Dame team that I can ever remember. Just nobody was talking about them all year. They don't have a lot of star power, but you know, quarterback Ian Book, you know, has put up some big numbers. Their receiver Chase Claypool is an outstanding player. So interested to see those two match up. Very balanced teams.
Yeah, and the Notre Dame, I mean, you look at the two losses too. I mean, they're quality losses at Michigan and at Georgia. That's not bad. A lot of teams would have lost at Michigan and at Georgia. So that's a good point. I'm excited for that one as well. We're talking with Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. You mentioned the Rose Bowl being an exciting matchup. I know a lot of Duck fans are fired up just getting back there, winning the conference. There's always the what if you didn't trip up at ASU, or if you scheduled easier and you didn't have Auburn in the non-conference, but the Rose Bowl is a pretty damn good consolation prize. What'd you make of the news today that Marcus Arroyo is going to be calling plays? That kind of caught me off guard. I thought he was going to be gone. What'd you make of that news, and how do you think that plays into, I guess, Oregon's game plan?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad to see it, because it's always good when a coach can finish out the season with his team. You know, you've seen this in the college football playoff when coaches have gotten jobs. Kirby Smart, you know, most notably a few years ago when he got the Georgia job, remained with Alabama through the playoff. Actually, Jeremy Pruitt did the same thing when he had the Tennessee job. But, you know, this isn't a playoff situation, so oftentimes that's your cue that you can leave. And it's just nice that Marcus has decided to stay on and finish with Justin Herbert, who he had a big role in developing over the last few years. And then obviously they'll hire their new coordinator at some point. But I always like to see coaches finish out the seasons with their teams, and that's going to be the case here, even though he's obviously got a lot of work ahead as the new UNLV coach.
Yeah, and you reported something else in-state offensive coordinator-wise, and I wanted to get to this today on the show. It's pretty big news for Oregon State. You reported that Brian Lindgren turned down the job offer to be the next Arizona State offensive coordinator. Were you surprised by that? Because I remember seeing the headline that his name was going to be one of the guys that they were going to go after, and then you reported that they offered him the job. You kind of think jumping to Tempe, maybe more money, a bigger profile program potentially, but I would imagine a pretty positive news day for Oregon State keeping their offensive coordinator.
Yeah, it is. He's done a good job there. Jonathan Smith's done a great job, at least this year, in getting them a lot more competitive. And I heard that Brian even had opportunities last year, maybe even in the NFL, to explore possibilities. And it just shows that he's excited about what's going on in Corvallis right now, and they feel good about their chances to make another step forward in year three. You know, ideally getting, you know, the next step is obviously to get back to a bowl game, but maybe make even more noise in the Pac-12 North, as they were very competitive in that division throughout the entire season. So yeah, it's definitely good news. We'll see what Arizona State ends up doing, whether it's Zach Hill from Boise State or whether it's another coach, and Zach sounds like he's got some opportunities as well elsewhere in the Pac-12, at least to explore. But Arizona State remains very interested in him.
Yeah, and you mentioned, too, a few moments ago when we're talking about the Pac-12, that eventually we're going to get to eight, and I've continued to see that coming out of these athletic directors talking and conference commissioners. They're acknowledging it, but there's kind of this vague of when we're going to get there because the TV deal is not up for a number of years. So a two-parter for you, just because I love dreaming about it, and I think it would be great for college football, especially when a lot of fans have a decreased interest in some of the other bowl games outside of the playoff, and it's playoff for buzz. How many years do you think it's going to take to get there, one, and then two, what is the correct format to go with if it is an eight? Like, you know, five conference champions, at-larges, you know, power or a group of five team, how would you like the format to look?
Yeah, so yeah, I think we're probably looking at the end of the cycle, which is still a number of years away. That's what everybody was saying out of New York this week, where a lot of the commissioners were meeting, a lot of the athletic directors are there for various events. You know, I initially wasn't in favor of having automatic qualifiers, but my view on the playoff has changed in recent years, you know, in large part because, you know, the Pac-12's been left out, the Big Ten's been left out. I think if you're going to have a national playoff, you need to have national representation. So I'm in favor of the five Power Fives getting an automatic bid and then having, you know, either three at-larges or, you know, in years where there's a really strong group of five candidate like Memphis was this year, to have that team get in with a couple of at-larges as well. I just think, again, you know, everybody's so concerned about finding the best team. That's going to happen naturally. But right now, it's a system that does not provide opportunity. And it's absolutely not a national playoff because of the scheduling differences and some of the politics that go into the decision making. So I think if you want to do that, like every other playoff system in this country and every sport, make it national and create more access and opportunity, even for teams that can't win. I mean, everybody freaks out about, well, this team couldn't win in the college football playoff. Which playoff system out there only contains teams that can win it? You know, maybe the NHL is literally the only one where every team can win. In basketball, we know who's not going to win. In baseball, generally, we know who's not going to win. You know, so and obviously the NCAA tournament contains a bunch of teams that have no chance. So I just think there's such an arrogance around college football about, well, our playoff has to contain, you know, only the teams that are the absolute best. It's just silly, because what it does is it creates a lack of interest, I think, in important areas of the country like the West Coast.
Yeah, amen to that. We're looking potentially, if Clemson and LSU win, you can have another year of an all Southeast or a national championship. And there's a lot of folks out here in the Northwest. I mean, they're going to watch the game and be interested in it, I guess. But much more intrigue if you have a team from the West Coast involved. I'll get you out on this one because I'm going on vacation. So I'm in a great mood today. It's my last show before Christmas vacation. So I'm not going to be back. So I'm talking a lot about the playoff games today. Give me your winners, and then who do you think is the ultimate national champion, just in case I don't get a chance to talk to you or have you back on the show before it happens.
Yeah, well, I got to stick with those initial quick picks, at least for now, you know, without knowing who's going to, you know, be hurt or other coaching changes. But I'm going to go with Clemson and LSU, and that LSU completes its dream season, you know, beating Clemson behind Joe Burrow at quarterback, who will win the Heisman by a very wide margin on Saturday night.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see Ed Orgeron win a national championship, so that's for sure. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. Give him a follow on Twitter, at ESPN Rittenberg. Great stuff as always, man. We really appreciate the time, and have a good holiday season, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again here soon.
All right, thanks for having me on. Have a great vacation.
There you go. Adam Rittenberg of ESPN. He's taking LSU. And I think the point is valid. I hear that all the time on playoff expansion. I know I beat the dead horse there a lot, but just, I mean, when every other sport has models like that, and I think we so often look at it and say, well, look how good Clemson, LSU, and Ohio State are this year. Nobody could beat them. That doesn't mean you shouldn't expand the playoff. You're looking at, again, having a all-Southeast national championship, which in an 18 playoff, that's probably where you're going to end up again anyways, because those teams are great. But just having other squads incorporated around the country, I think, would be awesome. He did highlight, though, and I wanted to bring it up, a couple offensive coordinator notes, Marcus Arroyo and Brian Lindgren. So for both Oregon and Oregon State, we'll talk about those coming up next. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fam.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Hey, National Signing Day is coming up next Wednesday. So Andrew Nimek's going to join us coming up top of the hour. Oregon State's got a lot of positive momentum going into Signing Day. We'll see how Oregon can close. It sounds like they're close to a really good class, or maybe it ends up in the mid-teens. Could go either direction. So we'll talk with Andrew Nimek about that coming up top of the hour. Still haven't talked about the Blazers from last night. We need to get to that as well. But some big offensive coordinator news for both Oregon and Oregon State today. I'll start with Oregon State. And this is one we mentioned a couple days ago on the show. And it was, it made sense because of the year that OSU had. Arizona State made a change. And it felt like he was going to be an attractive name out on the market. And we just talked to Adam Rittenberg about it. And that is Brian Lindgren, who is the offensive coordinator at Oregon State. He was offered the job at ASU, offered the offensive coordinator job at Arizona State, and he turned it down. And Adam just actually told us, if you caught that interview, that this is the second straight year that he's turned down job opportunities. That last year, kind of some NFL teams were sniffing around him, maybe as a quarterback coach, if he wanted to go up to the next level and coach in the National Football League. He's turned down back-to-back years of job opportunities to stick around Oregon State. Now, I have not seen any reports on potentially what this means for like a pay raise or a new contract, that kind of stuff. But if you remember, I think we talked about it last week, that Jonathan Smith was on the brink of signing a contract extension. And a part of that contract extension was getting more money for the rest of his staff. And this, to me, it was the first thing that I thought of when I saw that headline, was the fact that Lindgren was rumored to be going, or not going, but rumored to be sought after by Arizona State. And I wonder if this was the first sign of actually investing a little bit more in football. And I think if you're an Oregon State fan, man, I mean, we'll get to the signing day stuff in a little bit. This is great news. Lindgren is a good offensive mind. Their offense has looked great the last 2 years under Jonathan Smith. He clearly has a hand in that. And to be able to keep assistance away from moving down to beautiful sunshine, Tempe, Arizona, I mean, that's great news for Oregon State.
Yeah, I mean, Herm is quite the salesman, too. I mean, let's be real. I mean, he could probably be able to fancy some things up, make things look a little bit better down there than they should be. And just looking at this last year, a lot of missed chances to where you think this Beaver team could have been in a bowl game.
They were close,
man. 6, 7, 8 wins, possibly. They're right there. So the fact that to bail after 2 years and you've just gone up, exponentially up in this second year, I think it's the right choice for him, for sure.
Yeah, having staff continuity is so important at a lot of these programs, and it's not easy in this day and age of college football. It just isn't. There's so much movement and bouncing around, whether you're a staff that's getting fired or you're a staff that's having success and guys are jumping to bigger job opportunities. It's really tough to keep them together.
I think moving down there with Jane Daniels, that might be a little bit more pressure, too. You can see the potential in him and almost like a Kevin Sumlin, Tate injury down there in Arizona. It's like, all right, well, let's get the right fit here with the OC, right, and offensive mind and the quarterback. And well, sometimes that doesn't go always as planned. So you go into a new spot, eyes are on you right away. How is that offense going to perform? He's like, you know what? I'm going to stay back. We're going to keep building on this Oregon State team. I like that move.
Well, and then on top of that, too, I mean, you're looking at OSU. They need to find, not find, because they already got a couple of guys on roster, and one's going to commit coming up on signing day. But they got to figure out who the next quarterback is.
Right.
Jebbia, and then they just got the junior college kid. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they just signed the, Oregon State fans can help me, 55305. They just got a junior college quarterback that committed a few days ago, and he's coming in with the idea that he can start right away. And I've heard from folks down there this year, you know, Jebbia, I thought, looked really good in the Civil War, considering it was his first start. You're on the road. You're playing a really good defense in Oregon for large chunks of the year. That's a tough situation to go into in your first start. I thought he showed a lot of poise and a lot of promise in that game, especially with his legs, a little mobility, kind of naked boots and stuff. But they have been kind of hesitant, and the same thing kind of goes at Oregon, to be honest with you. There's just not a complete buy-in of this is the quarterback in waiting. They want to make sure it's a competition. So that becomes the next job for Jonathan Smith and Brian Lindgren after signing day, keeping the staff together, one, getting through signing day, and then developing and figuring out who your starting quarterback's going to be next year.
And hopefully building on the targets from this year. You're going to lose Hodgins, obviously, to the NFL. So some of the wide receivers were able to make some plays this year and make some surprising moves, and that you were able to have some confidence in that Oregon State offense. So it's a matter of, can you get the right quarterback, and can that wide receiving core build on the year that they just had?
Well, and on top of that, so good news for Oregon State today. Brian Lindgren turning down the job at ASU to be their offense coordinator. He's staying in Corvallis. We'll wait and see if there's a financial boost for him in staying with the Oregon State Beavers. But the other news happens with Oregon. Now, this has been something we've talked about a ton over the last week plus. Marcus Arroyo was announced as the head coach yesterday at head coach at UNLV. He had his press conference today talking to the media in Las Vegas. And he surprised a lot of people. He announced that he will be sticking with Oregon in the Rose Bowl, and he will be calling plays for them. So the timing of this is just strange, because as I've mentioned a million times, signing day is next Wednesday. So is he sticking with UNLV through signing day? I know you can't do much in a number of days, but you probably want to make sure all your commitments are reaffirmed and check in with all the kids that have signed or want to sign with UNLV. So I don't know if he's just going to be able to come back right away. So do you wait until after signing day and then come back? It's a weird dynamic. I know he's got a bonus in his contract for coaching in the Rose Bowl. I don't think that's what it is. I don't think he's sticking around for a measly bonus because the guy's going to be making, it was announced today, $1.5 million a year. But that was something, to be honest with you, I was not expecting. I did not expect Marcus Arroyo to be calling the plays in the Rose Bowl.
Well, and about that early signing day, I mean, it is important, yes, because you got to get those guys in. But then again, at UNLV, are they really clamoring? Hey, let's have a big first signing day. Maybe they're hey, finish up, get things adjusted, get your family moved over here, take your time. After January 1st, though, it's all guns a-blazing. You get here and you get started.
Yeah, but you got that second signing day in February, too.
Right, right. I that's how I'm looking at it, whereas UNLV, not as much pressure there.
So, yeah, I'm not quite sure how to feel about that. He had a good Rose Bowl. I would tip my cap to him. I thought he came up with a good creative game plan. They took shots downfield. I was a fan of what they did. So you hope there's more of that in store for the Oregon offense. Part of me, though, to be honest, was just kind of intrigued what a Mastro offensive coordinator game could look like, maybe a job opportunity for him. And everybody just kind of seemed to think that's what was going to happen. But he said, nope, that's not the case. And if you miss it, he did sign his contract. So Arroyo got a 5-year deal at UNLV. He's going to make $1.5 million a year, and it escalates to $1.6 by the end of the deal. So a nice little pay grade. I think he was making somewhere in the range of $800,000 a year as the offense coordinator at Oregon. So a nice little pay grade upgrade for Marcus Arroyo. So Brian Lindgren sticking around Corvallis and Marcus Arroyo sticking around Eugene for at least a couple more weeks. He will be calling plays in the Rose Bowl. Lots to get to in the next hour. I want to talk some more college football playoff. Because I got to preview those matchups and break those things down. We're not going to be around. Joe found a crazy Tennessee bowl game story we need to get to, which just kind of sums up Tennessee season. I would say that's just kind of the cherry on top for them. Also, a couple of NFL players accidentally taking drugs when they didn't mean to. And the story out of it is pretty funny. We'll start, though, National Signing Day. The first one is next Wednesday. Andrew Nimick with a preview of what's going on with Oregon and Oregon State. He'll start the second hour next. You got Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.